Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week, Dave is off, and I am very happy to have Pedro Cortez on the show. As most folks will remember from, a handful of episodes ago, Dave and I talked about converting high-end SaaS customers and like landing page design on the podcast. And the blog article that we kind of based that episode on was from Pedro. And that is the reason he's on the show today. So that's a really interesting story, I think, to start with. So Pedro, do you want to share a bit about kind of who you are and how we came to be talking today?
Yeah, sure. First, thanks for having me. And, you know, pretty much how I explain what I do is I help SaaS B2B SaaS companies, you know, use their website to generate more demos, pretty much just with better messaging and positioning, which is, you know, what I found is their main problem.
Awesome. Awesome. And we got connected here because you reached out after kind of seeing that we linked to your personal site in our show notes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was telling Pedro before we got started, this is the first time in 171 episodes that's happened to us. And so I think everyone out there who's looking to hustle in unique ways, maybe take a play out of his playbook and start looking at your backlinks from podcast episodes or other blog articles. That's really cool.
Yeah, I couldn't believe anyone didn't do that before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of tools out there that monitor backlinks for free. I know Ahrefs does it, but it's kind of expensive. But yeah, so I wanted to kind of jump in and start talking about, you know, on-page messaging and design. So Pedro, can you give a few examples of like the types of companies that you work with and kind of where you see people coming to you and kind of what stage of their business they are and kind of how you help them typically?
Okay. I mean, the stage, it just, you know, it depends a little bit on, you know, on the type of product they have, because usually I work with very high ticket SaaS companies. You know, sometimes they sell between $500 to $1,000 a month, and they usually start with partnerships or some offline stuff. And then when they get to the website, they just, you know, because the conversion rates are low, the customer acquisition costs are pretty high with paid traffic. And basically I come in with, you know, helping them explain their products better, because most of the times they're getting, like I only work with companies that convert really well demos to actual customers, because that tells me the product is really good and they're solving like a big problem. So that's the only way I can help them attract more demos.
What is really good? Like you have a metric you look for there, like demo to close ratio?
Yeah, I usually look for 30 to 50%.
Okay. Gosh, I'm trying to think in my head. So I run a SaaS business that is not high end in terms of cost. It's like $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And then I run a productized service called Podcast Motor that it does podcast editing and production. And it starts at $500 a month up to like $1,000. And I don't know if we have 50% close rate on calls, but probably 25 or 30. But we let people sign up directly on the website without a demo, trying to make the product and the sales process a little more hands-off. Do you think that's a fair move, or is the call to action for every high-end business, and I'll say productized service or SaaS, because I think in this respect, they're a little similar. Should the call to action always be to get somebody on the phone?
I mean, that's definitely a good question. It's very rare that people can actually pull off like a very high ticket product without having a call, just because it has, I mean, in B2B, it just handles, you know, several internal decisions and stuff like that. And that's just not something that you can, you know, get the website to answer everything, because it's slightly different for every person. Even if you have like a ton of segmentation, it doesn't really make sense, because it involves like big changes in a company sometimes. And, you know, it just have to talk with the decision maker and get them on the phone.
Gotcha. I know on your site, you do a lot with qualifying leads for your own consultancy. How important do you find that with both like the on-page work you do and the kind of further down the line in terms of getting on a call and demoing folks? Do you do a lot of work up front with your customers, and have you found it helpful for yourself to filter out people before you get on the call? Or is that only something you worry about after you have a whole bunch of demos?
Yeah, it's definitely something to play with. I usually don't start off with a lot of qualifying, just because I want to, you know, I want to make sure we're getting like enough calls and try to see what kind of quality of leads we are getting. And only after that, we can know how to, you know, properly qualify them, because the process and the questions and the application process or in the lead form, it's, it will have to be based on those metrics. And to give you an idea from my own business, I didn't really qualify much just to see what kind of people I was attracting and what kind of services I could provide, because that accelerated the feedback loop I needed to, you know, position myself as, you know, the best way possible.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think of price a little bit in the same way, that it's okay to start off with a lower price sometimes and a lower barrier to entry. I guess that is a lower barrier. It's a form of lower barrier to entry. And then once you start to find product market fit, you know, you kind of graduate up to the more reasonable price as kind of everything in your business matures. Okay, so let's start walking through kind of the SaaS landing page formula. I'll say SaaS or product as a service landing page formula for like a high demo converting homepage. Talk us through kind of how you think about this with your customers.
What I usually do, I like to start off with having the company explain what they do in like one short paragraph or in a sentence, because that forces them to, focus on the big things they solve, and, you know, it just try to make it as simple as possible. Because if they struggle to do something that simple, then there's just no way they can move forward on the next steps, which are, you know, a little bit more complex, and they'll just, you know, lose a little bit of focus when I ask the other questions.
Gotcha. And so once you have that one liner kind of headline, what does that tell you, and kind of how does that direct your next steps to kind of craft the rest of the story for their site?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm looking for like what they think is the big benefit, because I'm consulting with them, sometimes it's different than doing the exercise internally. Because when I'm consulting, I'm looking out for mistakes, like with differences between why they think people buy their product versus what people actually say. So let's say I was to start a new project. I always start with, asking questions to the founder or the director of marketing, and try to get, similar questions like these, so they can explain me why they think people buy their product. And then I'll listen to their demos, to contact forms and testimonials and everything, to try to see if it matches. And, you know, basically the first step is trying to find misalignments in both sides.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty common that we as product owners are so close to our businesses that we have an idea of kind of who we are and what we do. And then someone comes to our website and they don't see that at all. And so we wonder why in the hell we're not getting more leads and more highly qualified leads. And I think it comes down to a lot of like peeling, or the proverbial like peeling the onion a bunch of times and asking why you do something and who this is for and how they can benefit. But do you find that this process with customers of like, they initially tell you a thing and it's wrong, and so you ask them again, or you ask them in a different way, or you uncover stuff from their demo calls and, you know, chat tickets or whatever. Is there like a process you go through to really refine the essence of who somebody is and what they do after that first bit that they tell you? Cause it's always wrong, right? I always tell myself the wrong things, or I always tell our team like the wrong thing. And the truth is much different usually, right?
Yeah. I mean, even when people describe what they think they want, it's also different than what they actually want. And I have two ways of, finding this out. Otherwise you will find, you know, different feedback. And it's, you know, a problem with SaaS companies when they change their product to someone that wouldn't actually pay for it. That's a classic. That's another thing. Like the two ways I uncover that, because I'm listening to demo, so I don't get to ask follow-up questions. But with these two things that I do, I still find like really good insights if I pay close attention. So, you know, for number one, I look out for where they spend their time or where they spend their money. So if they're spending a lot of money in let's say managing people, or let's say you're selling like an HR software, if they spend like a lot of money recruiting people or managing them or whatever, then we know that that's a big problem for them, because they're already paying money for it. So we know that that's the kind of people we should listen to, and however they describe their problems and the solutions. And the other thing is, let's say they have like a like a written testimonial, or they send emails to the support team, or they ask a frequent question and stuff like that. Whoever writes like the longest stuff is because they are more aware of the problems they have. And if they are more aware of the problems they have, then that's the kind of people we want to attract. Because once they are problem aware, then we can just make it solution aware, which is just showing how that product can fix their problem. And then it's fairly easy to convert them. So that's the two things that I'll filter through. And, you know, that's how I attract the best quality leads, because they are at that stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. So in like the customer funnel, they're past awareness and they have the idea of what the solution needs to be, and just to make sure you're a good fit for it, right? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. In terms of kind of getting on the site and optimizing the, you know, landing page design and layout and stuff like that, what are some things that you typically see or you want to see people do like on a homepage to get people, to get customers going down the right path towards a demo?
Okay. I mean, that's definitely like a good question. I have a couple of things that is usually like are the easiest tweaks, but I usually just do more. But like the two like easy wins, let's say, it's one is introducing the problem you're solving. Like right before you explain all the benefits and the features and everything, you need to explain the problem that product is fixing. So for like the first reason is like for two reasons. Like the first reason is so they know which problem they're fixing and if the product is right for them. And two is to remind them how painful it is, so they actually have some urgency to, you know, to convert. Otherwise, they will delay it to probably never.
Right.
And the second, you know, easy tweak that that you can do is, I mean, you just position the demo as something valuable. So if I think of, you know, your business, like the productized one, like Podcast Motor, like you actually ask people to book a call with you. And in your case, you can just say, oh, you can book a call with Craig that manages all these famous podcasts. It has a podcast himself. And it's just like the perfect dude to guide you through and to give you some experience. So he's actually pretty valuable to, you know, talk to someone like you. And if you position it like that, it just makes it like something valuable and productive and not really a sales call, which it's a pain in the ass and wasting 30 to minutes to an hour.
Do you call all of these calls like consultations? I see that a lot, you know, poking around our competitors' websites. It's all like schedule a consultation. Is that the terminology you like to use?
Yeah, I like to use that with productized services, but with SaaS is more common to, you know, just schedule a demo or free demonstration or, yeah, you know, like a guide or something.
Yeah. Once you have, you know, someone kind of going down the funnel, I assume that you use something like Calendly. I see you use Calendly on your site. We use it too. Do you do anything once they click the first button on the homepage to start going down the demo path all the way through to when you actually have the call? What is that? What do you like that to typically look like for a business owner?
Yeah. Once they click, let's say they're on the homepage and they click to book a demo or something. Like I said, I positioned the demo as something valuable. I mentioned what kind of things we'll talk about in the demonstration and why it's valuable. Maybe we'll find, you know, some mistakes. Maybe we can help them with some things. And then we'll basically show how the product can fix those. It's just, you know, nice and casual. Then I use a Calendly embed, which that's the thing I wanted to say a couple of minutes ago, because no one likes contact forms. Like contact forms makes no sense. Like you want people to, you know, work to talk with you. It's, to me, it doesn't really make sense. And it's usually works like way better if you just use Calendly, because they have to choose the time first. And once we get that out of the way, you ask the qualifying questions. So it usually converts better with like a simple Calendly embed.
Gotcha. So you put a Calendly iframe right on your site. You don't ask for any information before they can book a time?
No, I don't. Because when you actually go to confirm it, you can only actually book a call if you answer the questions. So okay, it works like the exact same way.
Okay. After somebody has booked a time with Calendly. I know Calendly, depending on if you have like Calendly Pro or Business or whatever, there's different kind of features of follow-up and pre-call questionnaires and things like that. Do you do that, or do you put somebody into like an autoresponder sequence or anything like that? Or do you just wait for the call and then have the call with them?
I mean, in my case, I only ask the qualifying questions. For me, it's enough. And for the clients is usually like having some reminders. And I mean, honestly, when they get to book a demo, which is, you know, a big commitment, especially in terms of time, they are already ready to go. If there's, you know, not a big delay between they scheduling the call and the call actually, you know, happen, then there's no real need for follow-ups. When you actually need follow-ups, it's let's say you are on a blog of a B2B SaaS company and you download a lead magnet. You can have like a email campaign to book a call. That's really useful. And that's something that I recommend as an alternative call to action. Mm. But when they actually schedule a demo, it's not really a problem because, you know, the percentage of no-shows is usually not that big once everything is optimized.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. So I was talking to another product as service owner today, actually, about this is having the primary call to action be to schedule a demo call and the secondary action be to get on some sort of a list that leads to encouraging a demo call. Is that the kind of secondary call to action that you have for most, whatever, high-end business owners, SaaS or product as service business owners, is to get somebody on something that leads to a demo either way?
Yeah, pretty much what I usually, you know, talk about in my blog, and I mentioned this to my clients, is, you know, most people are not ready to convert right now, but they will be maybe in a few weeks or a few months. So if you have some, you know, some, and this, according to the buyer's journey, could be like around 70%. Of course, you're not going to convert all of those 70%, but that's still like a huge percentage. You can, you know, double or triple your business just with these things, if they work properly. Lead magnets, exit pop-ups, and stuff like that. If they have the right offer, then they convert at, let's say, 2 or 3% on every blog post, you have, or outside of your homepage and stuff like that. And then you get to follow up with all of those leads with, maybe you can call them, maybe you can email them personally, maybe you can have a email sequence. And you can see like how it compounds. And even if you just convert 10% of those into actual customers.
Yeah. I'm just peppering you with questions here. I'm sorry for for this, but it's just fascinating because I'm literally going through some of this strategy stuff right now. So this is like perfectly timed to pick your brain and be able to share this with everybody.
Yeah, that's no problem.
One of the things that I think about, we're running some paid ads to a podcast motor right now. And we're not sending everyone to the homepage. We have a couple of landing pages that are set up specifically for different types of audiences that we're sending messages to. Do you find that to be like a best practice typically, or do you like everyone to go to the homepage and then kind of go to the funnel from there?
I mean, when you're using paid traffic, I send them to a particular landing page and I don't have the alternative call to action because when, you know, they're right before converting, then you just don't want to add any indecisions or something to consider. It's just, you know, get them to a single goal. When it is the homepage, you should have like an alternative, just like some key distinctions here. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm just not sure at this time is, did you mention Podcast Motor or Castos?
This is for Podcast Motor, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's like the higher ticket one, so it makes more sense. And I think it makes sense. In your case, because you're booking calls, you just want to look at how much it costs per call and, you know, how many calls you need to actually turn into a customer and try to hit those targets. So how close are you to, you know, having a reasonable customer acquisition cost?
So we're just getting started with it. We just, in the last couple of weeks, have started running some ads, but I think that, yeah, because of the nature of kind of the higher price of our service, it can work from like a CAC to LTV ratio perspective. And we're finding that targeting, in our case, specific types of podcasters is working well, and we're sending them to specific pages on the site that are kind of dedicated to those types of shows, and the customers we already have that we take care of that have similar shows to theirs. So that kind of enhances some of the credibility or social proof. But yeah, this is another kind of journey that I'm going down across both businesses, is finding good ways to measure and track all of this stuff, because it just gets like a bird's nest really quick of like, you're running a Facebook ad and then they get on the site and then they convert or they don't convert and you have a demo, and it maybe like tracking from when somebody clicks an ad to books a demo to starts being a paying customer, or, you know, in the terms of Castos, you know, signs up for a trial, is hard. I mean, I don't know anybody that is really happy with how they track their paid acquisition, you know, all the way through the customer journey.
Yeah. I mean, it's, to be honest, that's never clear with any company. Analytics are just not, you know, advanced enough to, you know, capture all of that stuff, because people can click an ad and just remember a couple of days later to convert organically, and then it already messes with all of your numbers. So it's a little bit painful to track all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing we've just started doing amazingly, I've been in like online business for like 4 years, and we just started using UTM parameters for all of our paid acquisition, and like our really important links all have UTM parameters now. Just found out that in Google Analytics, you can sort your campaigns. So that's what they call it in Google Analytics, campaigns, and they track against your conversion goals. So you should have like goals like booked a demo or signed up for a trial as a goal in Google Analytics of the thing you want someone to do. You can measure your paid or any kind of campaigns that have UTM parameters versus specific goals. So I just found that out today, actually. So that's really cool that obviously wasn't doing that for the last 4 years, and I'm definitely doing that now. So I can say more easily, like, okay, I'm spending money on this campaign, and it is or isn't performing as a goal, you know, keep it or spend more money on it or kick it to the curb or whatever. So just a little tip for everybody.
Yeah, that's definitely something that it's very useful. It just gets like really long links though.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, we try to have prettier links somehow, and there's some tools out there that can do that, but I don't know if that's better or worse, but yeah, I mean, this is really helpful stuff. So you have a tool on your site, the SaaS landing page cheat sheet, that kind of, I love the kind of general layout that you talk about here. Can you talk through a little bit of kind of how this came about and how you use this with folks that you work with?
Yeah, sure. I mean, pretty much I just like to follow a process, you know, that's how I think things should be done. I think, you know, having different ways of doing landing pages that are not, you know, similar, or they don't follow like a formula, it doesn't really make sense, because then the website wouldn't be consistent. You wouldn't be able to compare, you know, campaigns properly, because landing pages would be like a very big variable. So, I mean, that's just how I like to work. I like to create big processes, and I like to make it, you know, nice and predictable. And what I did is I just studied you know, direct response marketers, like the amazing comp providers, the best ones of all time. And I mean, human nature doesn't really change. The way you sell products is not really changed, besides like the medium on how you target them. So what I did is I just studied those guys. They knew what already worked. It still works. And I used their copywriting formulas. In that case, I use Dan Kennedy's PSA formula, which is like it's PAS formula, because it's problem, agitate, solution. And I just made a more complex version of that. So it was more actionable. It was specific for SaaS products.
Gotcha. Gotcha. No, I love it. We'll link to this in the show notes, because I mean, I look at SaaS landing pages a lot, and this is, yeah, this follows kind of the formula I see that I like as a connoisseur of SaaS landing pages. And I think this is nice. I mean, I think that it's interesting to talk about not, I'll say, bucking the trend or doing something different from what other people do. Do you find that if you kind of generally do the same thing as everybody else, do you think you find that overall better, or is being a little unique and shaking things up a little bit, does it give you a bit of an advantage, or does it overall kind of make the situation worse for you?
And in what sense do you mean this, like for my website or for clients' websites?
I guess both, but I was talking more about for your clients. I mean, is sticking to the same formula as everybody else does a good thing, or do you think that being a little unique is good? And I ask because like in the blog article that you mentioned like kind of specifically like not trying to be like Intercom or whatever, because they talk to a different audience and have a different value proposition and stuff like that. Where does that differentiation come in? I guess is what I'm asking. Where should you be different than a lot of this other stuff you see?
Okay. I mean, that makes perfect sense. You know, in most of my articles, I talk about that because, you know, it doesn't really make sense to copy another page. One, because you don't know if it's working, it's a different product. And they just have like the brand awareness that you don't really have. So I actually have one article that if you look at Slack, like from 2014, they actually explain everything properly. And now they just don't really care. It's like, it doesn't really say anything because everyone knows Slack. So that's a huge difference. And that's something you can't really afford otherwise, just wasting money on yeah. advertising and everything. And yeah, honestly, the formula that you have here is pretty much what you can do most of the times. And I can tell you that most SaaS companies don't use this, especially because they don't introduce the problem and they don't answer objections. So they don't answer how easily you can switch from one tool to another. You know, they don't make that process easy. So if, for example, I noticed that your SaaS product, you know, Castos, I notice you help your customers migrate from their current tool to your tool to host a podcast, and you yep. don't mention that anywhere besides the footer.
Oh. That's terrible. No, it's right on the homepage. Are you serious? It's like right below the hero section of the homepage. No?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just not as obvious because you just okay. have like three things.
Okay. So you're saying this should be something that is like a main feature. Is that what you're getting at?
I mean, how do you mean it's like it's right below the hero section?
Well, I mean, so we have the hero section, which is like the, you know,
like in the one-click imports, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and do you think people actually read that? They only read like the headlines. That's the problem.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess this is also like a feature instead of a benefit, right? So like, what does one-click import mean? But the idea really is like, move all of your podcast content from another provider, right? That's like the more appropriate term.
Yeah. I mean, That would be, if you just wrote that literally, it would be like way better than what it is right now. Because yeah. if they, let's say they come to the pricing part of the page, you can just say, hey, I know you're probably using a tool, which is like a mess. We help you migrate. And now you can, you know, manage everything with one click and one
yeah.
tool.
Yeah.
So you can see how easy the transition is because, I mean, people are just browsing around and that's probably the biggest concern they have, and this applies to most you know, the clients I have. I can tell you that, let's say, 80% of all of the projects I do, the main concern or objection people have is setup time, migrating issues, or onboarding support. That's 80% of all of the objections they have, and the weird thing is I usually work with the industry leaders for that particular industry, and they usually have like amazing support. So you imagine how easy it is to just show how good the support is and
yeah.
make it like a very easy switch. And that's yeah. something you could totally do as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is really actually, we're recording this episode the day we just released a pretty big feature around this. So yeah, we're pretty big into this being a competitive advantage for us is to make it easier for people to switch to our tool. So yep, good call to make that more prominent on the website. So this brings up an interesting thing is we talked a little bit about analytics around like customer acquisition generally, not necessarily paid acquisition before, but can you talk through how you like to see customers structure their tracking and attribution? And I know this is a big old huge topic, but just kind of generally the things people should be doing to track their customer acquisition journey and cost.
Okay. I mean, to be honest, the simpler you make it, the easier it is to, you know, to notice the mistakes. So Like you pretty much just want to look at a few metrics. You want to look at how much it costs to get on a call, how much it costs to acquire a customer, how well do you convert like from a demo to a customer, how many leads you're getting from all of the other pages, let's say your articles or whatever content you have. That's the kind of things you need to focus on, because the thing about analytics is it just tells you the problems. Oh, it just says like, oh, like 80% of people look at this page and they don't really convert. And I mean, the problem could come from the previous page where it has like a misalignment in expectations. So that's why I like to focus so much on listening to what people actually say, because they'll tell me everything I need to know. They'll tell me everything that's wrong, because that gives me the solution, and the analytics just tells me what's wrong. So I just look at what's wrong, what pages I need to convert to optimize, and then I just look at what we can do and what things are missing when I listen to the demos.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Analytics is a very hard thing to get 100% right. And I think for me, for both businesses, we're just starting to get a better sense of the gist and the big picture of both of them. And I think even that, like you said, it just kind of points us in the right direction to say like, this is a problem and we have to go figure out what the problem is. But at least we're getting an idea of like, the problem is in step two of the journey, not, you know, we just have a problem. It's nice to know that at least, you know, people are getting here and this is where they're dropping off. We can go address that. And then, you know, I call it like whack-a-mole, like you fix this problem and then there's another problem somewhere else, you go fix it and all this kind of stuff. But, no, that's really helpful. So Pedro, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap up?
Probably the thing we can touch on is the step before we even get to the messaging, which is the positioning side of things, because SaaS is getting really, really competitive. There's some really competitive, products out there. Let's say the CRM market is like super competitive. Getting ads to work is just a nightmare because everyone's trying to do the same thing. And positioning yourself as the best solution and as a unique solution is definitely like a huge step before you even get to the messaging.
Hmm. Who have you seen kind of do that well? Or what does that really, I don't want to say what does that mean, but what does that mean practically? Like for someone to differentiate themselves from the rest of the people in their space, like the CRM space, right? So it's closed.io and not Pipedrive or whatever. What does that look like in practice for someone to successfully differentiate themselves?
Yeah, in practice is probably just looking at who's bringing the most revenue is usually the best case. Like you look at all of the customers you have, the industries you have and everything, and you look like who's bringing the most revenue, which one is like the easiest to sell, because that indicates like the problem is bigger for them and that's why it's easier to sell. And you just focus on that industry. You focus on a particular process. Let's say one big is not the ideal example, but it's probably easier to understand, is productivity tools.
Like to-do lists and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's just like way too many of them. And if you look at the successful ones, they all follow, the differentiation is the process they follow. So if you look at Todoist, they follow the getting things done process that has, sold millions of books, and they just, promote themselves as the tool that can follow that process. If you look at Trello, they follow that Japanese process, because I don't really remember the name.
Kanban?
Yeah, that's probably it. And I mean, they're actually positioning themselves and the way they actually designed an app and everything. And I think that really shows in their success.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's tough. I think as you said, it's getting more and more competitive, and the things we do from a product perspective and from a company and a culture perspective and messaging, like maybe even before messaging of the product and how it relates to the customer is important. And I think we all run the risk of, like we were talking about before, with differentiation, of differentiating ourselves enough to be different and unique and to talk to one part of our audience, but not so much that we then seem bizarre and unrelatable and alienate another part of our target market. But I think that's probably pretty tough, right? I mean, if you have a large enough addressable market in your niche, you should probably talk to just them and kind of intentionally alienate the rest of them because they're just not a good fit, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much having laser focus, and it's something that Jason Free talks all the time with his blog and his books. They're just really good at essentially what they're talking about. You know, in the signal versus noise, is just positioning statements and choosing who you want to be, because that makes a huge difference. And it makes it like an industry leader. So if I could give you an example, because sometimes I don't really want to give so many clients examples, is if you look at my own website, essentially I optimize for conversions, right? But I don't really mention it directly. I just say, I explain products better, or I just get you more demos. And that just makes me stand out from the other one. So whenever people call me, they just think, oh, I never seen a guy doing this. This is exactly what I need. Versus the other ones that, like, let's say the marketing agencies that are super generic, they just say, oh, we help businesses grow. We give you like Facebook ads and everything. That's like the best example I have, because everyone has seen those kind of websites, the marketing agencies that, they're probably more of a scammers than anything else. And it's just something they can relate to, because if I give an example of a SaaS company, it's just probably too close to what they used to, and they don't notice it as much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really helpful. Pedro, I really appreciate your time and help and perspective with this. It's obviously given me some things to go do with my own businesses, and I hope it helped the folks who are listening to the show as well. For folks who want to kind of reach out and learn more about kind of what you're up to and try to maybe get some help from you, where's the best place for them to connect?
I mean, the best place is usually you can just go to my website, which is cortez.design. And I have like a blog with a bunch of resources and articles and everything. You can get the cheat sheet. And I'm about to launch like the Lean Canvas, but for landing pages. And essentially, I'm just giving everything away. If you actually fill those up, you'll get the content for an entire page and everything. It's really a step-by-step process.
Awesome. Yeah, I've checked a lot of it out, and it's great stuff. So awesome. Pedro, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Awesome. Have a great day. And I was super glad to be on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.